Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We have on with us, as always, on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Mariam Jacobs, psychosocial therapist from the Netherlands. Mariam today is going to be speaking on wrongful convictions. There are so many things going on in this country today where so many people are being wrongfully convicted. Some of them have already been found to be innocent and have already been released, while others have been wrongfully convicted and are still sitting in their prison cells, even in spite of the fact that they have been found to be innocent. We also have with death row many who were executed, only to find out months later that those individuals were innocent of the crimes that they were executed for. So we are going to welcome Mariam Jacobs today, psychosocial therapist from the Netherlands, who will speak on such wrongful convictions and such injustice that goes on in the American prison. Are you on with us, Ms. Jacobs?
Hello, Leona. I'm here. Yes.
As always, we thank you and we're honored to have you on the show with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
I'd like to have you speak, Mariam, on these cases, or any individual cases that you're aware of, or any cases that you have worked on in the past, or whatever the case may be, of wrongful conviction.
Yes, there was, it's a very recent case. I have worked, before the pandemic, I participated in a documentary about European loved ones who are connected to an incarcerated individual in the United States on death row. The person I was connected to had a life sentence, but the other three women were connected to somebody on death row. And one of the death row prisoners has been released very recently. So he came from 20 years in on death row in Texas. He was released, and he has been wrongfully convicted, and he lost 20 years of his life. He was in a, I cannot exactly explain what the case was. I don't know exactly the details, but they were with four of them, and two people were murdered, and it was very obvious that this man could not have committed the murder. Simply because it had to do with the position he was sitting in the car, and the side of the car from the where from that man was murdered. Well, anyway, it was very obvious that he was innocent, but the other three took deals with attorneys, and it was a money thing, and so he was in fact a scapegoat. And a Dutch lawyer, she started to fight for him. She has been fighting for, I think, 10 or 15 years. Well, finally, he got released. But it took away 20 years of his life. And so that's very bitter. It's very bitter. It's very great that he is released, of course, but it's very bitter that he lost 20 years over a money. In fact, you know, when you look deeper, as we try to do in this show, it's about money again. So,
yeah, it's really a shame that, especially when it comes to plea bargaining, there are so many people who are offered a plea bargain, and I have a problem with that as well, because it's actually admitting to guilt when an innocent person plea bargains. But in the case that you're talking about, this man has recently been released, but you say there's a lawyer that's working with him. Is that to finally get him out of the prison, or to get him retribution for all the years that he had put in prison?
No, first it was about getting him out of the prison. There is also a film being made of him, and that's on YouTube. His name is Clinton Young, and he has also a very large support group. And she's not the only attorney who worked in this case. There were more attorneys. And they all saw that there have been so many mistakes were made, and things were simply not correct. So they wanted to get him out, and that took them, yeah, well, what I said, he has been incarcerated 20 years to get him finally, to get him out. So it had to become very huge in the news, and that a documentary was made. And this Dutch lawyer, she's a very young woman. She studied law in the Netherlands, but she was very attached to this case, and it hurt her that innocent people are put to death. So she moved to Texas and also studied, did a study on the at the university in Texas. I don't know which one, but a law study, and specialized in cases like this. And but she's in a team. She's part of a whole team. But it shows how hard it is to get out of the system, even when you are proven to be innocent.
Exactly.
You see? So that shows that how dysfunctional, malfunctional the system is. And what you say about plea bargain, there are more things. There is this plea bargain. There are more of these things that in fact suspend the law, and that's a big problem. We have discussed this before, the question, why do we have an Eighth Amendment that is designed to protect the position of the prisoner and to give the prisoner rights, and at the same time incarcerated people are tortured, don't get access to health care, often bad food and all that, beatings that take place. So we discussed this question more often, and that's also what I write about in the book. How is it possible that you have an Eighth Amendment and all these things, issues are going on in the prison? And what you see with the plea bargain is that the plea bargain, you have the Sixth Amendment, and the Sixth Amendment says that everybody has the right to access to court and to have an honest and neutral case fight out in court, but the plea bargain suspends the Sixth Amendment because most of the people never see court. And those things are very dangerous. They contribute to what you have now as mass incarceration and this malfunctioning of the system.
I find not only that, it's really, and you mentioned their rights, and the courts need to realize that incarcerated individuals do have rights. Many in the courts, when these individuals file lawsuits or whatever the case may be, to try to get it in court so that the judges will judge appropriately when they're filing these suits about the injustices going on, and the judges pretty much side with the overseers of the penal system. And that's sad too. But I was also going to mention, in addition to the wrongfully convicted, there are people that are fighting for those who are during the compassionate release, for these elderly. There's an incarcerated individual that actually works with us in the organization as well as in being in the prison, who has been trying to get help and trying to get help in releasing the elderly in the compassionate release, because he's working with an 84-year-old incarcerated individual who is severely disabled, and he's afraid to come out because he has no family left. He doesn't know what he's going to do. So we've been trying to find ways to get some kind of assisted living or some kind of housing for him. But these are two major issues: wrongful convictions, also compassionate release for the elderly who are no longer a threat to anyone, including themselves. They can't even take care of themselves. So these are some issues that really need to be addressed in the United States. And I want the audience to also know, Mariam Jacobs is not only from the Netherlands, but she has been in the prisons in the United States. So when she speaks of the comparison and she speaks of the injustice, she knows what she is talking about. And I'm sure that many of you who have become most familiar with her, not only through the radio shows, but also even on Facebook, she has a Facebook page, Deeper Justice. So I'm sure a lot of you know the hard work that she's put into everything that she has been doing and everything that she is talking about now. So, Marianne, speak a little bit more and let the audience know more about what you've been doing and all of these things together.
Well, what I really try to emphasize is that I try to understand what's happening in depth. So I don't try to find a scapegoat or point in who is right or who is wrong. But what I try to emphasize is what is exactly happening and how does the system function, and what does it say about the political situation in your country and the economic situation in your country, because a system like the mass incarceration system, you know, it evolved from society. I mean, it didn't fall down from the sky. It evolved from society. So it mirrors the problems in society. And I think getting insight in the political situation, social issues, historical issues, but also looking further, like what I just mentioned about the Sixth Amendment and the Eighth Amendment, people have to be very aware of what are these amendments and what's happening with them. And only awareness leads to change. If people do not really exactly know what's happening, then they don't know what to fight. It's the same as what you see now with the war in Ukraine. Everybody is against Russia and everybody is supporting Ukraine. But don't forget that the people in Russia, the ordinary people, they are also victims. They didn't ask for this war as well. And what I also see is we all point at Putin and we see him as the bad guy. But this war also did not fall from the sky. It has a history of years. And it's not that simple. It's not that black and white. It's far more nuanced. And instead of screaming and pointing and forming biases and judging, I would say look into the matter, see what is really happening, and then try to form your find your own opinion. But what you see, it's not only in your country, it's worldwide, that people easily point to other people, think in judgments, think in biases, without trying to understand what is really going on. It's far more nuanced, and that's exactly the same as what's happening with the prison system. And what I do for my work is I try, and for my book that I'm writing, I wrote my thesis. My thesis is finished now, but I still have to graduate, and my book will be the same issue. It's really about what is exactly happening, because that's the information that people need before they speak out, before they form their opinion. For me, it's really important to emphasize that.
You know what is happening, even with the Ukraine and Russia deal, we have people from the U.S. that are the news reporters that are speaking about all of these things that are going on. They're assuming, a lot of them are assuming, they're not getting the facts. And even though we know that this is inhumane, all this war going on, we also know there's a lot of inhumane things going on in our penal system in the United States, which nobody seems to worry about. But yet they report things in advance. Even in the United States, they always report news in advance before getting all the facts. And we have a major problem with all of that. And I also want to mention, yesterday we had a caller on. He goes by Joe, but he made a lot of sense too, because he said in order for changes to be made, even with what we're doing, trying to the criminal justice reform, he said the people of the country need to stop putting pressure on Congress. And these are some of the things that people do not seem to want to get involved in. And this is the same situation with all that's going on over in Russia and Ukraine, and all that's going on in our penal system here, and all the injustices around us. It's terrible.
It is terrible. I mean, you know, when you think about that, what I found out is looking at the amendments that should protect prisoners or people who are not convicted yet but are on trial, or what I see is that on a very smart way within the law, a lot of these amendments are suspended, and people should not accept that, because it's for the protection of the people. But then again, the prison system in the United States is very much based on endless revenge and retaliation. When you look at the life sentence, it's based on the crime. But here in the Netherlands, we also have life sentence, and really that people stay in prison until they die. But that's only a few of them, and you know my country is of course much smaller. But when somebody receives a life sentence here in the Netherlands, then it is because he is and remains a danger for society. And we know that because that person gets examined every few years. And after 25 years, he always has a chance to return to society when, you know, he has changed because he had become aware of his own issues. He has become aware of what he did, what the consequences were of his crime. So he's going through this whole therapy process, and then he is examined, and then they look, you know, is he rehabilitated enough to return to society? And if not, then he has to stay in prison because of the danger. But in your country, there is no rehabilitation. So if somebody in your country gets a life sentence, then it's only because of this revenge and retaliation. And that's a whole other perspective, you see. It's not about that a life sentence should be is bad or good, but it's about the reason why you give a sentence. It's about the perspective on incarcerated people and people who have committed a crime. And the prisoner or the criminal does not exist. Every person who commits a crime is an individual, and he is more than the crime that he has committed. You know, I meet incarcerated people here in the Netherlands, but I always see human beings, and they have the same stories, and they have the same emotions, and they have the same feelings and the same issues.
I'm glad you bring that up, because that's exactly true. And one of the things that people don't look at is the individual cases. They look at all prisoners in a stereotypical way, and it's caused a lot of people heartaches. And as you mentioned, in other countries, and we talk about this all the time, so I'm sure a lot of the hearers, the audience, are aware of what we're talking about right now, but there's others who have not heard this. And as you say, you don't have life and life without parole in the Netherlands or any other country unless it's really, really severe, terrorists, serial killers, things like that. Giving these people in prison life and life without parole sentences does not give them any incentive at all. Many of them have committed suicide. We have a high rate of suicide in American prisons. Many of them have committed suicide because they cannot cope. They have nothing to look forward to. Many of them cannot adjust. And knowing that each and every day of the morning, that every morning that they wake up, only to know that they have to be in prison for the rest of their lives. There's no incentive to what's going on in the prisons. There's no incentive. And I want to, we have a caller. You want to state your name, please? 863?
Hello?
Okay. Yes.
Oh, this is Bill Thomas. Sorry.
Hello. Hello, Mr. Thomas. Would you like to say something?
Well, no. I was just going to drop in and listen. And
Okay. If you have anything you want to say during the interview, during the show, just speak out, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So Mariam, in the prison that you're in, you mentioned treating people incarcerated like human beings. In this country, people in this country are called by numbers in the prisons, some of them by last names. There's no humanity in the way a lot of these people incarcerated are treated. There's no humanity at all. And there are a lot of good COs, correctional officers, and there are some good prison officials. But the thing is, they know about these injustices. They know about these abuses that are taking place in the prisons, yet they don't speak out. And one person, Donald J. Vodica, who wrote the book, The Green Wall, was a veteran correctional officer, and I'm sure the audience has been aware of him. He was a veteran correctional officer in one of the most notorious prisons in California. And he was brave enough to expose those in the prisons, those correctional officers and officials that were doing a lot of inhumane acts and the corruption that was going on in there. There has to be more people like him. There was also another one. His name is Michael Johnson from Montana. He was a lieutenant at the prison, Montana Department of Correction. He and his partner as well came on the show and talked about the lack of appropriate treatment in the prisons. We need more brave people in the penal system to bring all of these things out, because unless they bring it out, there's a lot of people that are not aware of half of the things that go on in these American prisons.
Yeah, I think, you know, the correctional officers, the staff is part of the whole system. And that's the whole problem, you know. I think that abolishing the whole system would be the only solution. Abolishing, break it down to the roots and build a humane system from the roots. That would be effect. I think in my view, that's the only way to make really a change, because what you see now is both incarcerated people, but also correctional officers, they are all part of a vertical hierarchy of power, and there is a lot of stress and suppressed tension. You know, it's all about safety this and safety that, and of course safety is number one, but it's been too how do you say that, it's too much of it, and I don't know the correct word in English, sorry.
It's overwhelming, basically.
So both incarcerated people and staff are part of the same tension, and this tension is there 24 hours a day. That's why you have all these excesses. You know, when you get suppressed from minute to minute every day, we cannot even imagine what it would be. Then someday we will explode, because we cannot relax. It's all about this tension. And that's why you have these excesses. And that's part of the system. And that goes back to all these gaps you have in law and amendments. That it goes back to the political situation where the incarceration, the prison system stems from. Like what I found out is, it's another interesting example, in the 14th Amendment, it's about equality for everybody. You know, every citizen is equal. But they don't use the word citizens. They don't use the word person. You can look it up on the internet. The 14th Amendment speaks about the equality between persons. But if you talk about a person, you can be also a little less person or a little more person. It's gradual. The right word. So the word citizen is a word. You are a citizen of a country or not. But if you use the word person, then you can also say you are a sub-person, a little bit less person. So you fall within the law, but you can be treated less as a person and still be a citizen. And that's exactly the position of incarcerated people. They are seen and treated like less than a human being, less than a person, but they're still a citizen. And that's a very smart way to deal with the law. So there are some gaps in the law that makes all this, what is happening in the prison, possible. That's what I write about, because that's what people have to understand. Because you have this institution, you have this system within the law. And in my book and in my thesis, I compare the prison system with the concentration camp, the camp structure that underlies the concentration camps in World War II. Well, the concentration camps took place in a war. The United States is not in a war. So the law is still functioning. And I wanted to know, why do I see a system that has some similarities? It's of course also different, but it also has similarities. Why do I see this system while the law is functional. It's not suspended like in a war. I have these answers and I wrote them down because I want people to understand that. And it's a little bit technical, but it's really important because then you know where it stems from. And then you know if you want to have reform, if you want to make a change, what you want to change. Then you can say, hey, plea bargain, for instance, what you said, plea bargain is a threat to the Sixth Amendment. It suspends the Sixth Amendment. And then you can protest against that. Then you can say, politicians, hey, we have the Sixth Amendment. We want this amendment to work for us. That's why we have designed it. That's why it's there. You know, you also have elections, you know, so you have this voice. And if people do not realize that plea bargain suspends the Sixth Amendment, because the most people do not enter court, do not have this, can to reach this right of an honest, how do you say that, process in court, you can fight against it with this information. This is the information that you need to fight.
Exactly.
You know, I always say the one thing that could really, really, really make everything right in the penal system is if not only our legislative members, not only our government leaders, our lawmakers, but also people that are overseeing prisoners, people in the communities, think about what would happen if your loved one was either wrongfully convicted or ended up getting a life or life without parole for a first offense, or they had a breakdown or something happened. How would they feel? How would you feel if you had a loved one that was being treated so inhumanely, that was being judged so wrongfully by people in society? If it was your member, people do not realize just because they've been blessed, they're fortunate enough not to have someone in their family who has made a mistake, who has stumbled. They don't realize, look what Jesus, I mean, he was crucified for everybody. But if we looked at each and every individual behind those prison walls in, as you say, a humane way, as a person and not a number, and think about what would happen if it was one of your own, people would maybe think differently. I don't know. Unless they children up to be like that.
Yeah, what I think, you know, if I look at it from a rational standpoint, and that's what I want to do, then I think, you know, if I commit a crime, I will be convicted and I will get a sentence. I mean, that's in every country, even in Norway. So that's honest. You know, then I cross a line, I hurt other people, and, you know, I deserve a sentence. But it's far more complicated than just that. And that's the problem. While I am sentenced, then what you see in the United States prison system is a lot of people who are sentenced, they have committed a crime, they have to do time, but they might have issues. Because if a human being lives a normal life and he does the things he does, then he will not commit a crime unless he has a psychological or psychiatric problem. You know, what you see in DSM-5, then you really are sick in your mind. But if you're not sick in your mind, if your brain is functioning on a normal way and you commit a crime, then there are a lot of issues that made you commit that crime. And besides the sentence, besides the conviction, there's a therapy process needed to examine what has happened, what led to the crime. That's deeper justice, looking at the human being behind his crime. So don't forget the crime. I mean, when I work with the people here in the prison system in the Netherlands, I don't deny the crime and I don't make a victim out of them. And I always appeal to the responsibility they have for the crime that they have committed. That's important because otherwise I would take away responsibility. But besides that, there is more. And that more does not have room in your system. There is more to this individual. So what has happened? What are the issues? Has there been trauma? What was his childhood? So many things that have to be talked through, that have to become, have to come to the surface. If that's not happening, then you stay stuck in this revenge and retaliation, and then you can incarcerate somebody for ages, but he only will break down further, and then he gets released. So what you release is broken people instead of rehabilitated people. And that's inhumane. That's a line that society crosses, which should not, that line should not be crossed. That line, that's very harmful, that's very shameful and painful.
You know, when I think about it, when I think about all the 2.3 million in prisons in the United States, federal, you know, men, women, and youth, I think about all the family members out there, the children of these people, the mothers and fathers. It's not just 2.3 million. It's much, much more when you come right down to it that are all in prison. And so a lot of them, when they do come out, as you say, a lot of them come out and they haven't been treated, or they haven't been treated humanely. So what happens? They come out. First of all, they have no way to get a job because of the quarries. They have no places to go because of the quarries, because of their prior conviction. They have nothing, and they end up in the streets, and a lot of them angry, frustrated, and the recidivism rate goes sky high because they end up back in prison. People forget, too. We have an epidemic, and I bring this up all the time in this country, of mental illnesses and addictions. People don't realize that these people need help. They don't need to be thrown into prison when they commit a crime. They need to be thrown into a long-term residential treatment facility. You know, and this is where we have government officials, we have legislative members that have not a clue how to resolve these issues when it's so simple a five-year-old could do it. These people need help. They don't need incarceration. And when they go into prison, they don't need the abuses that they're getting. They don't need the severe deprivations, the neglect, the medical neglect, psychological, the spiritual even. They don't have anything to look forward to except a way out, and in many cases, suicide. And some so frustrated, they end up committing homicide. And these are prisoners. But look at the officials. Look at the correctional officers who are actually contributing to not only those deaths mentally, but also physically at times. People need to know these people are being abused while in prison. They need, I started that petition to replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities. There's like 600 signatures when there should be 2.3 million. It's sad, but this is what we're living
it is sad, but you also have to take into account that we talked about it before too, that mass incarceration is, of course, also a billion-dollar industry. And we know that then we go to the 13th Amendment, which abolishes slavery, and we know that the exception in the 13th Amendment maintains slavery for the people who are incarcerated.
It is somewhere.
Pardon? Oh, okay. Go ahead, Marion. Sorry.
And that's of course also a huge problem, that a lot of corporations make a lot of money out of full prisons. I told you a few weeks ago about that article in in a American newspaper who sued the state because the prison was half full. So they lost money. And the state had to pay the corporations because too many people were released. So that's really the world upside down. We should not forget that.
Corporations, yes, exactly.
And exactly. And the thing is, Leona, what I said about the Sixth Amendment and the Eighth Amendment, it's really important to keep the political situation into account, really, because that's also what you see with the 13th Amendment. It abolishes slavery, but the exception maintains slavery. So the exception go against its own amendment. It's a duality.
That's
it's a
one of the, if I may, that's one of the very primary points that Society First is making. Florida's system has incarcerated more life without parole sentences than per capita than anybody else in the whole wide world. And it's based off of that same amendment, indentured servitude. And what Florida did in 1863, after they abolished slavery, and then 1865, they implemented that same amendment into their constitution, where indentured servitude was the only way slavery would be able to be brought back through the penal system. So they wouldn't be working as slaves, they would be working as criminals. And then they started giving out these life sentences, you know, and everything rides off of that. Everything has been built off of that, if I may. And we see a culmination of generation after generation after generation of fatherless children, of broken homes from these kind of statutes and everything. And this is what the industrial complex, penal industrial complex, has been built off of, you know. And that's a culture that we have to break as a nation. So not until the nation comes up and rallies together will change happen. So when long-term in-care facilities are required, where you turn prisons into actual treatment centers to deal with mental health, to deal with addictions, to deal with criminality behaviors, and it becomes a restorative system, you know, one that restores the broken citizen back to a productive member of society, that can go home and be a father, be a mother, to be a citizen that adds into their communities, you know, instead of taking away from them. You know, each offender, they do need to be taken out of society. Mm-hmm. I do not disagree with that. Okay, but they need to be treated, because if we think about it, none of us truly want to do wrong. Like, when we consciously think about it, if we could have the ideal life, we would all want to be loved, we would all want to be true, and we all want to be good, you know. And life, whether it derived from a childhood trauma or broken homes or even being in a rich home that without parents ever being home, you know, there's all kind of culminating effects that derive from childhood on up. And then you have the culture, mainstream culture, which creates a lot of the criminality, you know. And we need centers that actually restores, but we need to break the system, the mass incarcerational system, and bring a restorative criminal justice system, one that restores, one that heals. And I understand and the victim side of everything.
Yeah, but, I think, well, what you say is interesting. Sorry, I'll wait.
go ahead.
Yeah, what I find interesting is, and it's, what you say is, things can go together. You know, I also, when I work with the incarcerated here in my country, I don't take away their responsibility for the crime they committed. It's true. When you have committed a crime, then you have to do a sentence. But what you see in the prison system in the United States, the people don't have the opportunity to develop responsibility, because that's the main part where it went wrong. At the moment that I commit a crime, I don't feel responsibility. Otherwise, I could not commit a crime. And restorative justice for me means that you have to take responsibility, that you have to try to go through that process, that you really feel remorse, not in your mind as a social desirable answer, but really from the heart. And at the same time, look at your own issues and try to heal the painful issues that you carry inside of you. And that's what I hear you saying too. It goes together. Yeah, it goes together.
And to add on to what you're saying, the key component to all that, America has stripped away. Because the key component is a road to restoration. But when there is no road of restoration to even consider, there is no accountability to be taken because there's no reason. There's no rhyme or reason to wanting. I mean, what are we going to take accountability for when there is no opportunity to redeem myself from that past mistake?
That
you know, so when they remove that, then they remove change, because when the road of redemption is the road less traveled, then there will be no change. And if there's no change, there's no hope, you know, and all you continuously breed is death, destruction, anger, hate, bitterness, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Unforgiveness,
yeah.
Unhealing wound for both victim and now, if I was a victim and I have been, and I see my offender, he's got life. He's going to die in prison and he's never going to see the streets again. And okay, I got my vengeance. Not really, because I still hurt. Not really because it didn't do anything. Okay.
No.
But if I see this man who has hurt me or who has hurt other people now on the road of redemption, on the road of restoration, and I see him in him help people, and I see him help heal people, use his testimony to do something different that somebody that didn't go through what he went through couldn't possibly do what he can do because of his own path, his own life, what he has to give, then, you know, now I'm able to heal because I say, wow, even though this has happened, look how much good has come out of that, you know. And this is what the victim stance fails to see sometimes. This is what they fail to realize, that our society, if we take on the spirit of forgiveness, I'm not saying to release them from any debt, but if they're truly irredeemable, then why shall they live? But if they continue to live and they are redeemable, then allow them to redeem themselves. Now, if they seek out, bring a system that allows them to seek out that redemption that will add in back into our communities.
I will say you are one of the unique and special ones, because not all victims feel that way. And there is a state representative in Massachusetts. Her name is Representative Liz Miranda, whose brother was murdered. And she is fighting to abolish life and life without parole. So people like yourselves, you know, you understand, and you fall right into what Marion Jacobs, the psychosocial therapist, talks about, is digging deeper into deeper justice to find out the cause and what's behind it. And like you say, a lot of them, or that at least some of them, do change. They try to help others because of what they did themselves or went through themselves.
Yeah, and I think that when somebody who has committed a crime, when he goes through the process of restorative justice, then he does it for himself, but also for the victim. Because only a true remorse from the heart can come from inside, self-insight, by the offender. And if he then really can ask forgiveness from the heart, not just because the world likes him to say it, but really from the heart, that restores also the victim. So it helps. I have also worked with victims before I worked with incarcerated people, and I saw that. And otherwise, if the offender if he doesn't get a chance to go through that process, then also the victim will stay in revenge, bitterness, pain, and also the victim cannot really move on. And that's the whole thing. This is the key. But it starts with the process for the offender, that he can go through this process, a really deep therapy process, and after that he can go through the process together with the victim. It helps the victim too. So it's only positive for two parties, for both.
Yeah.
But I think before the system can be reformed, and I believe that reform is only abolishment and build a complete different system, first, before the system can be changed, firstly, the mindset in the people have to be changed, because systems stem from the mindset of people. It starts in the head.
Absolutely.
It starts in the mind.
And if I may, that is what we've come to realize, that no legislative body is going to bring change in Florida itself against this system, which has basically intertwined itself inside Florida's own, in the nation's own culture. The carceral culture that is so rampant down here. And what we have to understand is we have to bring humanity back into this situation. We've been so detached and so desensitized and driven to the unforgiving nature of crime and that, I guess, and it might just go to the fact that the money thing that you were, you know, the main thing is the money thing, you know, where indefinite imprisonment, which our Constitution forbids. I mean, we're one of the few states that can actually stand on that it's unconstitutional, because it's not just cruel and unusual, it's unconstitutional in a respect that our Constitution forbids indefinite imprisonment, Article 1, Section 17 of our Florida Constitution, under excessive punishment. And that derives when they tried to curtail, in 1885, they tried to curtail them giving life sentences to prisoners and leasing them out. So indefinite imprisonment turned into indefinite profit. So these judges, these lawyers, these police, these politicians, they're profiting, and they're able to dictate the flow and the flow of their own indefinite profit. Like, I get to guarantee my profit margin for life by just giving life, you know? So, I mean, the regular Joe citizen isn't the person investing in Department of Corrections, okay? They're not the ones investing in the contracts, and they don't even know who has the contracts, because they try to keep it cloak and dagger so much. You know, so it's the judges, it's the politicians and everybody else that are profiting off of this indefinite imprisonment. And this is why that law has gone ignored and denied when it's been brought up by the few for 135 years. But what we're doing is we're going to force them to address this issue. And we're going to bring a national outcry against the premise behind the Florida life sentence.
Yeah, what I find when I think about the law and about amendments, then I think the prison system can exist this way because of suspending, in an indirect way, suspending all kinds of laws and manipulating them, while at the same time, you know, that the contradiction here is, when I break the law, then I will be convicted and I have to go to prison. And the prison exists for politicians who break the law to, you know, to maintain the prison system in order to make money. And that's a contradiction. Because if the law would be followed, if the amendments would really be followed, there could not be mass incarceration, except, you know, when you think about the 13th Amendment. But if you look at the smart way the 14th Amendment is formulated, with the word person instead of citizen, if you look at the 6th Amendment, that's in fact indirectly suspended by the plea bargain, and there are more of these things, I think. It's a smart way to maintain such a system within the law, but it's like a war thing, you know. It's that law is suspended, but it's veiled. It's, you cannot grasp it, you know. It's beyond, you know, it's far behind the curtains, let me put it that way. And it's all in order to make money for corporations, but also for the whole, all these judges and all that. It's a business in itself. It's like bioindustry, and then with human bodies instead of other meat. It sounds harsh, but that's what I see, or how I see it.
Yeah. Ladies, I do have another appointment, and I thank you for just all the dedication you guys give. And,
I'd like to ask, are you okay? You're with Society First, or are you?
Yes, Society First.
Could you please let the audience know too about Society First, because Society First is an organization. It's a nonprofit that has been started in to abolish life without parole in Florida. So, can you just speak briefly on that before you leave?
Yes, ma'am.
State your name
again.
Okay,
my name is Bill Thomas, William Thomas. Society First is a nonprofit organization that seeks to bring social and criminal justice reform that puts society first. And everything we argue, every point we drive home, everything that we try to do, we have in mind, and we put society first in its delivery. And we do this, and many people say, how can you say that if you want to abolish life sentences? Well, life sentences has been a drain, especially in Florida, because there's overabundance. I mean, literally, with life without parole, life with parole that don't get paroled, and the virtual lifers that all are going to die in prison, that's sentenced to die in prison, regardless of how old you are, that means that's probably 30,000, close to 30,000 individuals that Florida has said are irredeemable, 25 to 30,000. Okay, that's terrible. If when you look at the economical tear that puts on society, and then not only the economical, but the sociological and the family units and everything else like that, that puts on the family and the generational development, okay, of a society, you'll understand all the culminating effects that derive from the life sentences or something that equates to that. And what we're doing is we believe that we can, as a society, we can do better. And as a society, we will do better. And we're going to lead that charge. And we understand that in order to break that system and to bring a new system, we have to abolish these life sentences. Okay, they're unconstitutional, one. Number two, they're inhumane. Okay, they do not solve the problem that society, that the politicians have been placating on for them to solve. Okay, they've been, you know, too much fear has been driven into our society, and no solution, no restoration, no healing put back in our society, just constant wounds. So Society First is an organization that is spearheading this movement. And we have a solution called the Ready or Not proposal that brings incentivized parole and that structuralizes. And actually, the Florida Department of Corrections under Mark Inch and now Deputy Dixon, or he's now Secretary, he was Deputy Secretary Dixon, but he's promised to follow suit on Secretary Mark Inch's formula, which has mirrored our Ready or Not proposal phase two. Now, phase one, the legislature would have to implement, which would be incentivized parole, which it takes the parole system out of the politicians' hands and puts it in the hands of those who are around each of these offenders on a daily basis. They get to see, they get to add into their lives, they get to train and educate these men and women, and even children that's incarcerated. They get to say, hey, we've watched this man grow. We watch this woman grow. We understand their addiction. We understand the treatment. We understand everything that's going on, everything that's needed, the mental health, the psychological situation of each individual. And even if you come to a place where this person is just not sane, this person is just not ready to be released back out to society, they have civil commitment centers, okay, where they can have their own, they have more freedoms. They can be treated more humane. they could be treated with a whole different thing, but they're not out back out in society hurting people. Okay, until they've proven redemptive opportunity, you know, and product of change. We champion that. We champion hope. We champion just a new culture. We champion a new culture, and that's what Society First is all about.
Can you just let the audience know how they can contact you to maybe help or to even learn more about it? If you have a contact for the audience for Society First?
Yes, ma'am. We have multiple of them. Our website is societyfirst.com. It's society-first.com. I mean, if you Google Society First, it'll pop up. You can, our Denise Capo is our CEO president. She could be reached at, I guess we can give her a number, 561-951-9781. And you can reach me at williamthomas.sf77@gmail.com. And I mean, any which way, I mean, our Society First email is reform@societyfirst.com. With a dash in between Society First. Multiple different ways to reach out to us. You can reach us on Facebook at Society First.
You also have an event coming up around the 24th of this month of March, I believe.
March 25th. This is we are gearing up to start the Road to Restoration Coalition legal team. Basically, it's a prison tour. We're going to begin signing up every single lifer in Florida and to be represented on this on the unconstitutionality of life sentences. Because there's going to be a rally outside the institution that we've chosen to go into. This institution has close to 500 lifers alone in it. The top 10 institutions that have lifers equate to about 5,000 people. Now we have close to 40 main institutions or 50 main institutions that hold lifers.
Okay, we also, we're going to, Mariam, I would like to have you all before we close, and I'm sorry to take up so much time, but I wanted to let you know that we will be having Society First on the show before that 24th, I believe. Is that correct, Mr. Thomas?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And Mariam, can you please give the audience your information before we do close? And Mariam, again, will be on every Wednesday. She comes on from 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Time to either 1 or 1:30 p.m. 2 or 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time. But information as well.
I'm sorry. My website is www.deeperjustice.com. My email is mariamjacob67@gmail.com. And my website is www.deeperjustice.com. I'm also on Facebook with my name, and I have a Deeper Justice page. I am on Instagram and LinkedIn with my own name. And I hope this year my book will be coming up, and then I will also have a website only about the book.
Mariam will be talking more about these events that she's been working on and all the things that she's been doing that we haven't talked about, and she is going to be letting us know when that time is going to be coming. I want to thank Mariam Jacobs for being on. I want to thank Mr. Thomas for calling in. And both of you are working towards some of the same similar things that we're trying to get. And I mentioned it to people across the country. As I said, Mr. Thomas, there's a lot of people in all the states in this country who are trying to abolish life without parole. And Florida is the leading state. At the same time, they all want to be a part of what you're doing in some way, shape, or form.
And if that's so, please have them contact us. We need all the legal help. We need all the volunteers that we can get.
And hopefully we'll be able to make some positive changes. Mariam, thank you so much for being on. Again, it's been an honor having you on every Wednesday. And I know you take time out specifically to come on the show because we need your valuable information, your valuable suggestions or whatever the case may be. So I thank you for being on. Mr. Thomas, I thank you for coming on as well, for calling in. And hopefully we'll be doing some more positive discussions next Wednesday. Tomorrow, Blog Talk Radio will have on as a guest Sandy Freeze, who is a life coach therapist who also recently wrote a book. So she will be coming on, I believe, from 2 to 3 o'clock. So please join us tomorrow. Mariam, thank you so much, and we look forward to having you on next Wednesday. And again, Mr. Thomas, good luck with your organization. And I believe it's going to be going off really successfully as well. So we are going to be shutting up now. Mariam, do you have any last statements? Thank you.
We keep fighting for the incarcerated people. And thank you for having me again.
Again, I look forward to having you on next week. And you've been a blessing to a lot of people. Everyone listens. And while we were doing the show, I was getting all these likes coming in from Facebook. So a lot of people are listening in, and a lot of people on Facebook are seeing and listening to the good work that you've been doing as well. So I thank you, Mariam, again, for coming on. You're blessed. Awesome. You're really appreciated, and we're honored to have you.
Thank you, Leona.
We will now be signing off, everyone, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Please call in. Don't be afraid to call in. Ask Ms. Jacobs any questions you want to ask about the work that she's been doing, and please feel free to go to her website, go to the internet, type in Mariam Jacobs, psychosocial therapist. You'll find her all over the place. Thank you so much, and we are now going to be closing down.